Welcome back. It's Beyond the Box Score. I'm Dan Schneier. That's Jacob Gibbs. And for some reason today, we're recording to you today in tank tops. I don't know exactly what's going on. I was told to wear a tank top today. I do have an idea because I watched Tuesday's show with Ryan, but apparently the sickos in the chat have asked for this. I don't know why anyone would want to see this much skin from the BTB crew, but we're here today to talk underrated wide receivers for the 2026 fantasy football season in tank tops. It's July. It's 99 degrees out. It's so hot out, Jacob. I had to cancel my weekend golf plans. That's how hot it is. You know how hard that is for me to do?
Yeah, man. Good to be here in the tank tops again. Infamously, the Puka Nacua call, like rookie season Puka Nacua, where I was like, hidden gym, Puka Nacua, was wearing a tank top for that. I remember vividly. Adam Azer giving me a hard time.
Good luck, tank top.
Yeah. So, yeah. And in the tank tops, we trust. Ryan Heath was sporting one last podcast that we did here on Beyond the Box Score, last live stream, and the chat ate that up. And so I said, if we get 50,000 hype points, then Dan Schneier will wear a tank top at the next podcast. And here we are, the chat. You know the sickos show up and support. So thank you all for hyping the video, liking the video, commenting, all that stuff, all that interaction. Really appreciate that. Dan, what do you got there? The league? Yeah, is that like the fantasy football show or something different?
Right. So you would think that this was when you said you got to wear a tank top for the show. I was thinking I have the exact perfect tank top that I want to bring to the Beyond the Box Score show, because this is a show for sickos, made by sickos, listened to by sickos. Just people around here who are sick, who like fantasy football. And this league is my home league, Jacob. We are going into the 20th anniversary year of this league. Why I love it so much is, A, it's the 20th anniversary. B, it has been auctioned since day one, 2007, in my friend Kevin's restaurant, dad's restaurant. We did the first auction draft when people weren't even doing auction drafts. We were that sick. Auction keeper league. At the time, Jacob, we had seven keepers. They went up by like percentage points, like 20% and then 25%. We had this whole little system. It failed, by the way, because it just made it essentially a dynasty league. We've retooled the league, but this is year 20. And I wanted to bring this out because my friend Vince made this for me, and he's the one who hosts every year's draft. And on the back of this, you get to see something. This is not going to work if I do that. Can you see that?
It looks like a clown.
It is a clown. It is me as a clown.
Oh my gosh, that's Dan Schneier.
Remember the Roger Goodell? Do you remember the Roger Goodell meme? That's me as Roger Goodell, commissioner of the league, the clown. It's the perfect logo for the league, to be honest. And so this year, as usual, Jacob, I don't know if you've done this, but I host, I'm commissioner for the home league draft. Every year you get together and you say, we've had a live draft every single year for 20 years. We've never missed a live draft. Every single year, there's at least someone who cannot make the live draft date. So I'm struggling right now. I'm battling in the emails, talking back and forth. We have to get this live draft going. We cannot miss a year. But this is the league. Had to wear it today.
20 years, man. That is impressive. That's very cool.
And I think 8 of the 12 teams are all original team, original members from the 07 season, which is even more cool.
Yeah. All right. We are here not to talk about tank tops or people are laughing at Dan's golf tan.
It is a massive golf tan.
Producer Emma said, "Sun's out, mini guns out, taking shots of the boys for no reason."
Well, it's fair. And to be fair, Jacob, I mean, look, I hadn't been to the gym in 3 weeks. I think 3.5 weeks. Once golf comes around, I stop doing it because I think it impacts my game. But when you told me I had to wear a tank top, there is a little vain. I'm not going to lie. I am a little bit vain. I was like, all right. And I texted you yesterday. I'm like, I'm going to the gym. This motivated me to get a little pump in, you know? I'm gonna
awesome. Wow.
Yeah.
Did you do some push-ups before you jumped on the air today?
No, I should have. That would have been smart.
We're here to talk about the most underrated receivers in the NFL today. Me and Dan Schneier.
This is a wacky start to the show.
The chat knows that this is going to be a Josh Downs show.
Yep.
I asked my brother, man. I asked him, I was like, who do you think the most underrated receivers in the NFL? Like, if I did a show like that, who do you think we would talk about? And he nailed two of the three right away, which I thought was very cool. I was like, who do you think would be on the thumbnail? And he got Josh Downs and Parker Washington right away. Yep.
Is this essentially a Tape Bros show?
It's a sickos show. Yeah. I mean,
it's advanced stats and tape. It's like, who actually is the best at this position?
Yeah. So I'm excited to dig into this. We're going to start with Jalen Coker. Shout out to all the fans out there. You know who you are. just did a Beyond the Box Score breakdown on Tetero McMillan. And low key, it was kind of a Jalen Coker video, honestly. So you can find that here. If you don't know what I'm talking about, please do like and subscribe. Thank you so much. Dude, Jalen Coker, when targeted since entering the NFL, 65% success rate. Only Puka Nacua is higher. 65% as a member of the Carolina Panthers is rivaling Puka Nacua on the Rams. What the hell? Like, that's so insane. This guy is so, so good. And we finally see him rewarded. Finally, it's only been a couple of years. Like, really, really love this for Coker. So wanted to start here. And what we're going to do with each of these receivers is we're going to, this is a callback here for the Beyond the Box Score fans. We're going to the Danometer rating, which the people know and love. very scientific. And so we've got a fantasy Danometer rating and a real life Danometer rating on today's show. So we're going to start with Coker. I think for real life, he's obviously 11 out of 10. But for fantasy purposes, how far do you think this actually goes?
Well, before we do that, I will briefly say the last episode where we did a Danometer, it got a lot of pushback and people were really angry about some of the Danometer rankings. And I must say, I went back, I retooled it. I'm not, I am open to criticism. So I went back in, Jacob, retooled everything. You know, there's a little scientific thing here or there. You go into Excel, you kind of mess around with numbers and you come out with a system you can trust. And that's where we're at right now with the Danometer. So we're starting with real life or we're starting with fantasy for Jalen Coker.
Real life is 100 out of 10. Fantasy, please.
Fantasy, please. Unfortunately, this is not going to be the sea heads, if we want to call them that, trying to get away with that. But they're not going to like this. 4.2. He's a 4.2 for me. We've talked about it a lot with Tedrone McMillan. I saw it yesterday, Jacob. I think it was Ian Hartitz who tweeted this out. And I never know if I pronounced that last name
right. It's always Ian Hartitz.
Hartitz, not Hartitz. Hartitz. All right.
Either way is right.
One day I'll get pronunciations at a higher than like 42% clip that I'm at. But he tweeted yesterday, and it was number of average 250-yard passers in the NFL by season. And it dated back to like 2017. We had like 17 quarterbacks in the NFL averaging 250 yards a game. The last two seasons has dropped as low as it's ever been, below, for the first time ever, single-digit number of passers in the NFL passing games that averaged 250 a game during the year. It was eight teams. The Panthers obviously were not one of them. And the Panthers, if we looked into it, were probably in that bottom tier when it comes to passing yards per game. There's just not a lot of volume in this offense in the passing game, unless you project a massive jump from Bryce Young. I do like part of Bryce Young's skill set. I think he makes good plays out of structure. I think he makes good clutch plays in short, tight areas. But as far as just generating a passing game that I can rely on a player like Jalen Coker for, I can't get there. So I just think he'll be a very frustrating player to roster this year outside of best ball leagues.
I think that's fair. Did you listen to the T-Mac video by any chance?
Partly. It was while I was also doing something, so it's one of those.
At the end, you're going to find some pretty potentially compelling stats on Jalen Coker, but they do have a lot to do with this final game against the Rams, who did have really easy cornerbacks to pick on last year. Coker goes for 9, 134, and 1 on 12 targets against the Rams. So what I looked at was the 5-game sample size following the week 14 bye last year. And during that time, Coker had a 26% first read target rate, which is really good. And he was able to get that even with T-Mac sustaining his first read target rate. His rate during this 5-game sample was identical to what it was before. Tedrone McMillan still at 28.5%. And so I think that's interesting, where it's like maybe we can just see this offense like hyper funnel targets specifically to these two guys, because really, who else is it going to be on the offense? Like Chris Brazel, Xavier Leggett are I think at, if anything functional at all, they're just field stretchers. The tight ends aren't really target earners. The running backs, maybe Jonathan Brooks, but that hasn't really been a big part of the offense. And so I think this might be one of the most concentrated offenses in the whole league in terms of where the targets go to just like one or two players. And we saw at times that it worked out for fantasy. We see some of these big games from Coker late in the year, 17.4, 14, 16.7, 28.4 PPR points. So yeah, he outscored T-Mac in that final 5-game sample, and his expected fantasy points per game was higher as well. I think that there's a there's a very thin path to it potentially working for fantasy, but I think your sub 5 rating on the Danometer scale is totally justifiable. I think that's,
I like the counter argument though. Like, I think in the chat, shout out to, I think it was Joanna Coffey who says, or Joanna Coffey, I don't know, but I think she says, if Bryce takes the step, he will take the step forward. And Doom Guy was saying he plays because he can play all the spots. Yeah, that's the thing with him. If they can figure out a way to evolve their scheme offensively, and they do have a new offensive play caller, it could be a situation where week one comes by, Jacob, and I've totally changed my opinion on what he can be for fantasy based on how the actual offense is operating. If they're operating through him in the passing game because they view him as somebody versus T-Mac who can kind of do more things for them in the passing game, short, intermediate specifically, I think it's possible I can get on board with this. That's where I'm at with it. It's just as of now, I see it being fleeting and hard to predict.
Yeah, totally fair. All right, Jalen Coker, maybe the most underrated real life receiver we'll see this year. I don't know if you can depend on him for fantasy. I'm talking about Zay Flowers, somebody you definitely can depend on for fantasy. Zay. Extremely consistent last year. And through 3 years here, we've just seen him get better and better and better. Fantasy points creep up each year. Career best 14.3 fantasy points per game last year, 118 targets, 1,200 yards. And over on the right here, you see his per route data just keeps getting better. 1.7 yards per route run as a rookie, 2.3 in year two, 2.5 in year three. We got a different play caller. I think Todd Monken did a lot to help Zay Flowers in terms of drawing up play action designs. If you look at play action yardage last year, it's Jackson Smith and Jigba, and then Zay Flowers, and then everybody else that is distant third and fourth and fifth. He got a ton of production in the play action game. But I think that we'll see a lot of that, albeit maybe in a slightly different way with more under center and stuff here from Declan Doyle coming over from Chicago. So we just did an episode with Rich Rebar last week. If y'all missed that, it's got Declan Doyle and Lamar Jackson on the thumbnail. It's really good stuff there. We dug into all the play callers, 2 hours long. I think Zay Flowers is set up well here. He's a player where, like, there's very little target competition in this offense.
Yep.
We're going to have Heath Cummins on. Heath Cummins is coming on the program here to talk specifically about Flowers. He gave some really interesting comparisons on FFT this week in terms of other small receivers who have not been prominent red zone targets early in their career, but then became that because it was, I think, just so apparent that they were the best weapon on the team.
Sure.
Best on the team at getting open. I do think that this situation is sort of specific where you're playing on an offense that has Lamar Jackson and Derrick Henry. So those are clearly the best red zone weapons, right? But in terms of the actual targets, I do think Zay Flowers has separated himself as, like, by far and away, not only the best player on this team at getting open, but one of the best players in the whole league at getting open. So I wanted to throw it to you. I'll find a few more stats here, but what do you think about Flowers in terms of real life and fantasy? Do you think he's still underrated? Do you think people realize how good this guy is yet?
No, I do not think in fantasy, he'll remain underrated throughout time because he doesn't score touchdowns, or at least hasn't scored touchdowns yet. As you went over, and I think you're right, touchdowns are harder to predict year over year. Also, there is so many times where we can just run into touchdown luck based on different changes. For example, an offensive scheme change like we're getting here with Declan Doyle, like, that could change everything from a touchdown standpoint. We don't know how their red zone offense is going to look, and we don't know how the play action passing game is going to really look. We haven't really seen Lamar under center that often in heavy play action 5-7 step drops plays. And in my mind, I think back to, like, watching Zay Flowers at Boston College, Jacob, and I remember him in an offense that wasn't similar, obviously, to Declan Doyle or what the Bears have been running, but had more under center, 5-7 step drops off play action. And it had Zay Flowers winning on the vertical plane over and over again with double moves, with just absolutely great route running. A lot of the time, the ball was completely mislocated, just really bad quarterback play he had there at Boston College. But I think there's a little bit more to shoot, like, a little bit more upside in the deep passing game in this scheme versus Monken's. And that's, like, that makes sense, right? Like, if you're running play action from under center, you're going to have more opportunities against fewer, you know, too high looks from the defense, fewer cover three, cover six, cover two looks possibly. So I think that's in play for him as far as getting more long touchdowns. But I think overall, you're just looking at a player who can really do a lot. He's really good after the catch. He's good in the short area from a burst standpoint. He's good at winning vertically. We haven't seen it yet. I think we will continue to see it. And he has this long developed rapport with the quarterback that no one else really besides Bateman on that roster has. So there's just a lot working in his favor, and the price is still cheap despite all that.
What I've got on the screen right now, I think, points towards exactly what you just said, where it's the rapport with the quarterback, and it's also the fact that he can win in a wide variety of ways.
Yeah.
And that's how you get a 29% target share, fifth in the NFL behind only Justin Jefferson, Ja'Marr Chase, Amon-Ra St. Brown, and Jackson Smith and Jigba. You can't get to that 29% rate if you are a one-trick pony or whatever, you know? Like, but this isn't, that's not what we have here at all. Flowers can win all over the place. He's good with the ball in his hands, too, create after the catch. I really don't think we've seen the full unlock of like what this skill set could be. And it's possible we get that with Declan Doyle, 1,200 yards last year. Look at just, I mean, here's yards per out run. He was right up there. Like Luther Burden, right. Tyreek Hill, and Christian Watson had kind of limited roles last year in terms of like the actual like full season data. Only Puka Nacua and JSN were above Zay Flowers.
That's impressive.
Here it is over the past two seasons. It's Puka Nacua, JSN, Nico Collins, AJ Brown, Zay Flowers with a higher yard per out run rate over the past two seasons than Ja'Marr Chase or CeeDee Lamb.
All the guys were,
or Amon-Ra St. Brown.
Yeah. All the guys he's in this company with, these 10 receivers, he's 5 of 10, are all guys we're taking in like round one or two in fantasy, besides maybe AJ Brown.
Yeah. Comments section says they're worried about Zay Flowers because of Elijah Surratt. What do you think? I know you like Surratt's game.
I like Surratt's game, and it's possible he could emerge as this red zone guy. So I could see it, but ultimately speaking, I think the stats and what Jacob's kind of gone over, both the tape and the stats bear it out. He's just a really good receiver. Like, he's much better than people realize, and it's clear. And I think he's the number one guy on that team.
For sure. Another question from the chat here, and then we'll hit our
first. A little small human nature thing on Flowers, too, that I think is interesting. With Antonio Brown calling him out, I don't know if you saw that, Jacob.
Nope.
Antonio Brown, like, massively called him out. He said he's the reason the Ravens haven't won with Lamar, blah, 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 whatever it may be. Human nature-wise, Jacob, if I was Zay Flowers, that would motivate the absolute living you-know-what out of me. Like, whenever somebody doubts me in the sports that I play, golf, whatever it may be, tennis, it makes me want to go harder. And I think as long as – if you've gotten to that level that Zay Flowers has gotten to as an athlete, he probably has that gene as well, or whatever you want to call it, that trait. So I think we could be looking at like a really – and also he's in a contract year as well. These are good things for him as well. I don't know if they've re-signed him yet. I know they were talking about extension, but they haven't done it yet, I don't think.
All right. Let's get some more human nature takes from Dan Schneier from the chat here. AJ Brown, chip on his shoulder maybe here to prove something. Wanting out of Philadelphia for a long time. Now he gets to go play with potentially the best quarterback on planet Earth. The chat wants to know. Wow. Potentially. The chat wants to know what your opinions are on AJ Brown, because Adam and Jacob are saying some pretty crazy things about him. Could be a first round pick in fantasy. What do you think?
First round pick in fantasy. I'm open to that because basically what I just looked at, which is statistically speaking, he's still one of the best to do it as far as yards per out run. You just put it up, his ability to get open. And I really do believe this fit is excellent for him, both from McDaniel's scheme standpoint, and obviously Drake May is an unreal fit for him. May's skill set to get the ball over the top. I'm trying to think back. Like, I don't, just thinking of the UNC days, I don't know if May's ever worked with a receiver like AJ Brown. So I'm open to this idea. My one concern is just the way New England kind of distributes the football in the passing game and the way that offense is designed to really not focus too much on one player. But it's not like we've never seen it, right? Randy Moss got a ton of targets during that era of Josh McDaniels and Patriots football. So I don't think it's impossible. You could argue same thing was the case forever with New England. Like, oh, they're never going to have a 1A back. And then Corey Dillon signed and they had a 1A back. So maybe it's just if they have the star player, whether that be Moss, Dillon, or now AJ Brown, they'll lean on that player.
I think so.
That comment by Woof Woof is hilarious.
All righty. Good stuff, Dan. Let's hit our first break and get back and talk about a few more underrated players. All right. Next up is somebody who's been on this list for like 8 years or something.
Yeah.
Jacoby Myers, who is in by far the best situation he's ever been in, I would say, at this point in his career. I don't know if he has quite the talent that he had early in his career that was allowing him to look like kind of a somebody who could be like a 1B type of receiver, somebody who could get open against a lot of different coverage types and be able to present an open target consistently. But man, this is a really underappreciated player here, I think. So I'm going to throw his career stuff up on the screen here. Jacoby Myers with the Patriots, infamous for somehow never scoring touchdowns across like almost 100 receptions or whatever to start his career. And the reason that that was brought up is because look at this freaking year two data for Jacoby Myers, dude. 2.3 yards per route run. 11% first down per route run rate is really, really good. Yep. But there were no touchdowns, so people just didn't really know who he was. Then he ends up, you know, washes up with the Raiders, has two more good seasons with New England, 866, 804 yards. Ends up with the Raiders. There's not much going on there, of course, but he has 1,000 yards on this during this Brock Bowers rookie season where everything was funneled to Bowers. People just completely forget that Jacoby had 1,000 yards. He also scored 8 touchdowns in his first season with the Raiders. I think the fact that he's able to sustain like really pretty good, pretty respectable per route data with these Raiders teams says something. I wanted to point towards his Jacksonville data. So pretty close to the early career stuff, like 10% first down per route run rate is really, really good. That's what his rate was with the Jags, 23% target share with the Jaguars. Here's where he ranks in terms of total receiving yards over the past 3 seasons. He's played 2 more games than Jalen Waddle, and he's ahead of Waddle in total receiving yards over the past 3 seasons. He has more receiving yards than Jameson Williams, Garrett Wilson, T. Higgins during that stretch. He's been consistently good, and I think because he's not a flashy player, he just kind of gets slept on a little bit. So if you would, can I get a – I don't think we got a Danometer for Zay Flowers. You can get that if you want.
Yeah.
But where are you at with Jacoby Myers? Do you think he's like supremely underrated, like one of the most underrated players in real life still? And do you think he's a good fantasy pick?
So I'm going to go 7-7 on Flowers. Myers, I think, is really interesting for me because I remember we watched so much Jaguars All-22 last year for in-season beyond the box score. And he just fit that offense like a glove almost immediately. You come over, you're traded from the Raiders, you had no offseason, no training camp to learn the scheme, no rapport with the quarterback. And it's like you're running out there sometimes what I thought was like better routes than Brian Thomas, to be honest, last year, watching them too on the same play and comparing it and better understanding of like where to be spatially within the play's concept, which I think that's the best thing he does, Jacoby Myers. I don't think when I watch him, I'm watching a truly special wide receiver. Like there are guys we are going over today that are going to be making my underrated list or that you're going to talk about that I think, you know, you've already mentioned him, Josh Downs. Like, I think Josh Downs is a much better receiver than Myers. He's better at getting open. He's better at creating short separation, long separation, better acceleration. There's pretty much nothing about his game, the exception of maybe his hands, that I would take Myers over. But Myers has that spatial awareness that's made his game, in my mind, special. Because especially today when you're watching, like, I'd love to see the stats on it. But you're seeing so many teams playing zone or pattern match, which is, like, sort of zone, but it is zone. A player like this who understands where to be at all times within the concept of the play and where to sit and where to go and where to move into, especially when they're running these like late season, like two-man routes that you were talking about on 2 shows ago, Jake, these like vertically breaking routes. He's understanding like, okay, I know where to break within this route to present the biggest target area for the quarterback. And that's what I saw over and over. So I think he's just a really smart receiver as far as how do I like factor it into the Danometer? I'd probably go 7-4 on him because that's something that, you know, you can't teach. I don't know how to explain it.
Well, I'm actually going to push back and this is going to drive the signals crazy. I think Jacoby Myers might be better than Josh Downs. I think Josh Downs has a lot to prove and I'm the biggest Josh Downs truther on the planet here. Well, maybe not. Some people are really high on Downs at this point. They just see per route data and just assume that's what's going to happen. But
yeah,
I think a lot of Josh Downs per route data can be attributed to the specific role that he played. Where he's
interesting
out there on third downs with the intent of getting him the ball. It's kind of like Dalton Kincaid. Like right. He's out there to be that third down winner. And a lot of it is in very short, specific types of ways where he just needs to shake one guy and get 4 yards or whatever. Jacoby Myers, what I think he has proven that we haven't seen yet from Downs, and I think this is relevant because this is something Michael Pittman has as well as a very important skill, is like you said, this guy can get open over the middle, over the intermediate area, against all different types of coverages.
Yeah.
You can have him out there as your wide receiver one next to an Alec Pierce, next to a Josh Downs, and he can just be the glue guy, right? Like those guys are, I've heard the Colts offense referred to as like a basketball lineup where all the guys like fill very specific types of roles. And he's just like that small forward 3-and-D guy, right? Like he's just out there to help elevate everything else. I think that's basically what Pittman has been. And I think that's what Jacoby Myers is at this point.
Interesting.
Which allows BDJ to be the deep guy, which allows Parker Washington to be the catch and run guy.
Right.
I think he's really, really underrated for real life. And for fantasy, I think he might be underrated too, because I think he's, because of that, probably going to be the guy who's out there a lot.
Right.
We'll see what the role actually is. If they go to more two tight end sets or something, then one of these receivers is coming off the field. I don't know what it's going to look like, but we know it can play in and out of the slot. And I think it makes sense that he'll probably be out there ahead of Parker Washington in two receiver sets, even though I love Parker Washington to death. We're going to talk about him later. I think Jacoby Myers is probably the safest pick from the Jaguars if you want to get exposure to the passing game. And if the offense overperforms, then maybe you get some upside, you know?
You know what? You sold me. That was a good argument. So I'm taking back what I said, and I'm moving off of that. I'm moving off of that foundation point, because I just thought about it in my head too. And I was like, when did that Jacksonville offense go from ugly in the passing game to starting to click and look like it can be something special? And then down the stretch of the, obviously the fantasy and regular season, it was special for your fantasy teams or for the NFL. It was pretty much when they traded for Jacoby.
Yep.
Like, so what does that say about what he's actually worth?
I've got the data on the screen for the past 3 years, and you'll see it's sort of by first down per route run rate. You'll see that his first down per route run rate and yards per route run are very similar to Michael Pittman.
Yep.
And the total production is very similar too. 2,700 yards basically for both of them, 15 touchdowns for Myers, 14 for Pittman. I think he's just overlooked. I mean, he's in the same vicinity as like T. Higgins on a per route basis over the past 3 years while playing for the bulk of that coming with the freaking Raiders. Yeah. I think he's very overlooked. Let's talk about Josh Downs. Josh Downs, the apple of our eye.
Moving to 9-9-1 on Jacoby Myers, by the way.
Hell yeah. Is this the year for our special boy? 5'9", 171 pounds. Can he be more than a slot bunny hop receiver? I think that's a Matt Harmonism. 78% slot rate, 77% slot rate, 75% slot rate is what we've gotten from Downs in his 3 years. Really insane per route data in year two that got everybody all juiced up. That kind of fell off a little bit last year as he was playing through some injuries, but still, I mean, still good data across the board. So here's the 2025 data. You'll see his teammate Alec Pierce ranked as wide receiver 17 in yards per route run, with insane conversion rate on the downfield throws last year for Alec Pierce and Daniel Jones. Where's Downs? Lower than you might expect. Wide receiver 56, just below Quentin Johnson and Brian Thomas Jr. But again, I do think that was influenced by the injury. But yeah, so it's clear why we love Josh Downs, why we think he's underrated, right? I mean, 2,100 yards in 3 seasons coming in right away as this undersized guy who can win in a lot of different ways. We just haven't quite seen it all turn into what we think it could be yet. Look at this, that's crazy. 2.2 yards after the catch per reception last year, after being at 5.5 in each of the first 2 years. I think that's like the clearest indicator that it was so much of the last year's data was due to injuries. So where are we at on Downs? While I'm being a little bit apprehensive here and making sure we don't get crazy with the enthusiasm, I do still have him way above consensus for fantasy purposes.
I think you're higher than I am for fantasy purposes, even though they kind of cleared this proverbial runway. And I am open to the idea of, like, if Alec Pierce is slow coming back in training camp and we're like, oh, I don't know about Pierce, like he might be ready for week one, any of that stuff crops up, I'll be higher on Downs, just to throw that out there. But I think he's still, to me, one of the more explosive receivers in and out of his cuts. And I think if the Colts design the offense to get him the football, running whip routes, running these kind of like in-breaking routes that are defined for the quarterback, it could work. I just don't necessarily personally believe his skill set fits Daniel Jones' skill set as a quarterback. I'm not saying that 2.2 wasn't because of the injuries, but it's also possible, looking back at Daniel Jones's time with a player like Wandell Robinson, for example, and you saw the yards after the catch really down for Robinson and then really rise with quarterbacks like Russ Wilson and even Jameis Winston and Jackson Dart. It's possible to me that his skill set just doesn't fit this quarterback that well. I don't know. We'll find out. I still like him as a player. I just remain skeptical for fantasy versus like where you have him, just for example. Like, I think I'd feel more comfortable with him outside the top 36.
This is as high as I could push him, which is wide receiver 33. Yeah. For audio listeners, I have him ahead of Alec Pierce, Chris Godwin, Quentin Johnston, Marvin Harrison Jr., Brian Thomas Jr., Carnell Tate. I think Jacoby Myers, we just talked about. I think all those players could outscore him. That wouldn't surprise me at all. But I also think there's a slim chance that he is as good as we think he is, and he comes on and just like lights it up right away and becomes someone who's very, very valuable for fantasy in terms of perceived value. I think him and Jaden Reed are very, very similar, very easy corollaries here. You might remember, dude, like I think it was 2 years ago when Reed was going off, where people were putting him in the top 10 of the wide receiver rankings, rest of season, even in Dynasty. And nothing had really changed. He was still in the slot only role. It was just that he had strung together several games of the best possible outcome for Reed, which is good. You know, these players can create after the catch, can create potentially down the field too, can get they're with great play callers who are good at setting them up and finding mismatches. I mean, that's the thing with Downs is like he's getting matched up against a linebacker sometimes, you know, like that's why I don't want to overreact too much and then be like, well, his per out data is better than Michael Pittman, so he's better. It's like, well, Pittman's out there doing the big boy wide receiver one stuff against the top cornerback. It's not really the same.
Correct.
But still, he can get these advantageous looks and can create a lot of efficiency at times. And I think that we might see something like that where he catapults up people's rankings early in the season and maybe does it all year. But that's another thing. Another concern with Downs is health. Same thing with Jaden Reed here. It's like all the fantasy people are clamoring year after year, like this guy, what, let him be a real receiver. Myself included. I love Josh Downs. I want him to be a real receiver. He's got to stay healthy, man. Like there's probably a reason that the coaches keep putting these guys in part-time roles is because they're not even making it through a full season in that role.
Correct. And that's the scary part with a player like Downs, who I think you put it up before is like 5'9" and not, you know, not maybe built for a full-time role, depending on how the Colts use him, which I think is going to be the most interesting part of this season. Cause Steichen is, I was looking at the numbers, just Steichen, Daniel Jones with Steichen versus Daniel Jones with any other play caller he's had, including Pat Shurmur. People remember that being good, but it actually wasn't good. That first season with Pat Shurmur, he just threw a lot of touchdowns against bad teams. It's night and day. And I would use that to say, like, I believe in Steichen's ability to scheme. I believe in Steichen's ability to create what you're talking about, which is these mismatches where it's like, all right, well, I had Pittman, now I have Downs and I don't have Pittman. What are the ways I can find a mismatch for us using that in mind, having a Downs type on the field? I'm into that. I like that idea. I also think it's possible it could be a situation, Jacob, where it's like he makes one or two really big explosive plays a game and then gets like seven other targets funneled to him from Jones checking down type stuff. And that's a really good, consistent fantasy player right there that beats whatever ranking we're going to have. So I'm open to the idea of Downs. And you're right. Like, we really haven't seen what the full upside is based on the role he's played so far.
Super fantasy friendly game, especially for any type of PPR format.
Yeah.
So you said Josh Downs might not be built for it. You know who is? Unfortunately, he is dealing with his own injury right now. But if healthy, definitely built for it is Alec Pierce. Just absolute freaking monster of a man here.
Yeah.
Wide receiver one for this Colts team. They let Michael Pittman go. Here's where I have Pittman, by the way. Also built for it, I think. Man, he's really put the team on his back. And
I like Pittman this year in fantasy a lot.
He's been playing through it anyway. Yeah, I think
him. You know, I'm weirdly high on the Steelers' the offense this year. And Pittman's one of the reasons why.
Him, Jacoby Myers, Wanda Robinson, like, I would bet a lot of money that they will be higher than where I have them ranked.
They will score higher, you're saying?
Yep. I think
that's just a note to those listening. Likely. Like, that's part of how it goes with ranking. Like, Jacob's ranking on upside. We're playing fantasy to hit certain outcomes.
Meaningful if you draft a receiver in round 9 and he gives you round 8 value.
Right.
It really doesn't matter that much. Like, if you need that, if all the other players on our team get hurt or something, and it's like, oh, thank God I've got Michael Pittman and you're going to give me eight points and 11 points and 6 points or whatever. Like, sure, that can be great. But most of the time you want to be shooting for more than that. Like if all your players get hurt and you have to be trusting your wide receiver 3 to step in and be consistent, you probably screwed either way.
Correct.
So I want to shoot for more upside in this range, but that doesn't mean just because I have Pittman at wide receiver 42 that I think he's a bad pick. I think he could be a great pick and there could be a path to upside. The Steelers team could be really pass heavy, could play fast, could be really pass heavy in the red zone. All those things could benefit Pittman. He could have 8-10 touchdowns, sure.
And kind of is like a better version of Alan, a much better version of Alan Lazard, which has worked with Rodgers.
Maybe he sneaks into this top 24 range. That's totally realistic.
I think it's very possible.
Could definitely outscore Josh Downs, could definitely outscore Alec Pierce. I do want to talk about Alec Pierce, though. Pittman's not on this list because we've seen the breakout. We've seen him be a very good player. I think people know who he is. He got paid. Alec Pierce had the breakout, so I didn't know if he quite belongs on this list. He had 1,000 yards last year. He got paid. But I did just want to point towards his per route data. Just the last 2 years are really, really good. It wasn't just last year. He averaged 1.8 yards per route run in 2024. He had 824 yards and 7 touchdowns in 2024. I think it goes a little bit overlooked because it wasn't that meaningful for fantasy. But he's been getting better throughout his career. On this episode I just did with Ryan Heath, where we looked at what matters at the wide receiver position for fantasy scoring the next year.
Yep.
Something that we found really interesting was horizontally breaking routes tested really well. And that's an area where they've actually used Pierce a lot more than people might expect for being such a downfield oriented type of receiver. He has a 39% rate in terms of the percentage of his routes that were horizontally breaking routes. And Dan and I did a lot of film digging on him last year because he was really playing well. And what we noticed was that, especially on the routes breaking back to the ball, he was really good on those digs and stuff. So I think he can potentially take some of the Michael Pittman stuff. It's funny hearing the sentiment about him this offseason. It feels like people just don't think that he can, that he's just a downfield guy. And this is almost like a joke that they're going to like make him, like try to make him into a Pittman or something. I don't know. We've seen him do some of it, whereas we've never really seen Downs do very much of it at all.
Yeah, I mean, I'm with you 100% on Pierce. We watched so much of him last year. There was no way to not be impressed with him on tape. It reminds me of when he came out into the draft. Dave Richard and I were doing a lot of work on the prospects, and we both watched him, and we were like, is this Alec Pierce guy really freaking good? And that's how it looked on his tape at Cincinnati. Like, I didn't understand why he fell in the NFL draft. I thought it was odd, considering that he actually had really good tape at the college level, and he had good measurables from a size-speed standpoint. Like, he tested well. I think ultimately it was that the NFL viewed him as this outside only receiver who can kind of only win as a boundary player on the vertical plane. And that's what we're about to find out this year. The Colts certainly paid him to be more than that, though. Like, I'll be honest, last year watching him, I was most impressed with just how he wins in these one-on-one situations. That's kind of based on the scheme, based on Jonathan Taylor. This year, I think you're right. He will be asked to win in that intermediate range where Michael Pittman won for them. And if he is asked to do that and can successfully do that, we pretty much now have a complete fantasy receiver, right? At that point, because he's winning on the vertical plane. He's still a red zone option. He can win on the outside on the stop routes, stick routes by the first down marker. At that point, outside of just like quick releases off the line of scrimmage and slant type stuff, like, and obviously he's not running like the drag routes and the overs that much, but he's pretty much has the full route tree at that point. And he's one of those guys who can win for you intermediate, vertically, and then in the short game as well with the stuff breaking back to the quarterback.
Yeah. So there's the Colts breakdown. It's interesting. I do think if they brought in like Keenan Allen or something who has ties to Shane Steichen, that might change things here. That. Might hurt both of these guys a lot. But as for now, if healthy, I think Alec Pierce makes a lot of sense as a fun upside, late round type of pick.
Actually,
Josh Downs as well.
I'm sorry. I'll do a 9-4 because I forgot to do it here. 9-4 for Pierce. Big fan of his. And I'll say this. I take back what I said. I wouldn't mind Keenan Allen signing here because it's just keep him the hell away from the Chargers. I'm fine with just do not put him on that roster. Please do not block Trey Harris.
You'll sacrifice Josh Downs for, am I hearing this right? Trey Harris?
Yes.
That's what you're concerned with?
I'm higher on Harris than Downs. I love Trey Harris's game, man.
Okay.
I can't wait for it. I can't wait for the Beyond the Box Score sickos to. I can't wait till he realizes his fantasy potential and everybody's talking about Trey Harris.
I'm afraid you're going to have to wait. I'm sorry that you can't.
I may have to wait a long time for this, but.
Parker Washington, one of the few receivers who averaged over 2 yards per out run, him and Alec Pierce both. It was really an impressive season from him. And I don't think people realize how explosive he was, that it wasn't just like he's a slot player. He wasn't used in the same way that Chris Godwin was used in the slot for Liam Coam. He was used down the field a lot. He was wide receiver 3 in total explosive plays over the second half of the season. I think it was only Jameson Williams and Puka Nacua had more than Parker Washington in terms of total explosives created. He was a really important receiver for this Jacksonville offense, helped them unlock the middle area of the field. And so I wanted to talk about Parker Washington. I've got an interesting stat here from Matt Harmon. The reception perception profile on Parker Washington is definitely worth checking out. So Harmon had him graded higher than Jaxon Smith-Njigba on a few specific routes. I don't want to overreact to that because, gosh, I tweet so much. Where is it? Here we go. I don't want to overreact to that because if you look at the actual, this is why you read the article and not just look at the green charts, you know. If you look at the actual charting data overall, Parker Washington's success rate versus man and press coverage was not very high. And I think that that makes sense. Dan and I both like this guy a lot coming into the league, but ultimately he is somewhat limited by his athleticism. There's plenty of receivers who are still very good, even though they're not phenomenal athletes. Really, if you look at the best receivers in the league right now, outside of Ja'Marr Chase, none of them are that fast, you know? But Parker Washington in particular is just not super explosive. He was able to create explosive plays because he's really, really good with the ball in his hands. He's also really good at winning in contested catch situations, so he can win down the field, even if there's not a ton of separation. But I did want to mention that I think ultimately the ceiling for this type of player is probably sort of limited. I think the absolute best version of this archetype is Amon-Ra St. Brown, but he got better and better and better at the man press stuff. So maybe Parker Washington does that, but his work is cut out for him for sure. Where he was good against the specific coverage types was zone. And like I said, winning over the middle of the field. So I wanted to point that all out. He had a higher success rate than Jaxon Smith-Njigba on posts and was in the same vicinity as JSN on digs and curls. So it's the over the middle of the field stuff. Really, really important. As long as he's on the field, which I think he needs to be because he's important in moving the chains for this offense.
Right.
I think he's going to pile up a lot of stats. Very fantasy friendly game.
Yeah, I mean, from a factor of underrated, he's an 8.8 for me, a player that you watch on tape and you see, okay, maybe he didn't run a fast 40 time. He's not big. He's not the most explosive player in the jumps or anything from the testing standpoint, but he just knows how to get open. And it's similar to Jacoby Myers to me watching him. Just he has a little bit more like flexibility in my mind and ability to kind of change his body, specifically at the catch point. I think he's really good at adjusting to the football, which is an underrated skill set of his that makes him this kind of, like you said, like chain mover or somebody you can rely on.
His average depth of target was 12.5 yards. That's exactly way deeper than a slot's typically.
Exactly. It's not like Myers or Downs. It's not like these whip routes and like winning just like small drags over the middle. He can actually threaten the defense vertically and then break. There's another player we're not going to talk about today unless you let me give a couple at the end of mine. And he reminds me a little bit of that player, even though I think and I'll bring it up at the end, I don't think anyone would actually think that these two players are similar players. But when I watch them on tape, that ability, what you just said, to kind of threaten the defense vertically, despite maybe not being the fastest guy on the field, and then break off that and create that little window or at times big window, honestly, watching Parker Washington for Trevor Lawrence to throw into, makes him so quarterback friendly, which is going to lead to targets and production. So I'm in on Parker too.
All right. I'm excited to hear who this player is.
I think you know who it is.
The Dan is teased, but we'll get to that after our second break here. Is it Luther Burden?
He's one of them, but no. I think you know who my most underrated receiver is. I think you know.
Who is it?
Want another guess or no?
Nope.
Michael Wilson.
Oh, nice.
He didn't make your list.
No, I compared Wilson to Parker Washington actually on the show with Ryan. He's like a bigger version of Parker Washington who's even less explosive.
And I think better, like presents a bigger target for the quarterback.
Less explosive only in terms of athleticism.
Yeah.
I think we might see him used in a different way this year. I'm pretty intrigued by Wilson. I know that the splits with Marvin Harrison Jr. on the field are really bad, but it's a completely different offense here. So we'll see what it looks like in, what is it? Year three for him? Year four?
The problem with him is I think Ryan brought this up, or maybe it was Rich Rebar who brought it up. If it is like a LaFleur offense we're used to in Green Bay and like what he ran with the Jets, it's going to be the slowest pace in the NFL and it's going to be real bad for fantasy.
For sure. Yeah. That's why I didn't put him in today's show I mean, look at this. Michael Wilson is a top 10 receiver in the NFL.
I don't hate that take.
And he was, I do. And he was wide receiver 10 in fantasy last year. Dude, the receiver position is so good. I don't even know if Devontae Smith is a top 10 receiver in the NFL.
That's the receiver position has too many talented players for that to be true.
It's not even close.
It's probably not even close.
Dude, is he better than Michael Pittman? I don't know. Is he a top 30 receiver? I don't know. I love Michael Wilson, like but there's so many Michael good Pittman. Receivers.
I like his game better than Michael Pittman's.
Let's talk about another one. Romeo Doubs, kind of in this same type of archetype in terms of Michael Pittman, Jacoby Myers, these guys who can play outside if needed. That's been what he's been asked to do by the Packers, and he's just slowly improved his game year over year and never really had any type of super meaningful season for fantasy. So I don't think people realize how good it's been lately. One of the more reliable, there's been some drops, and he also had the weird thing where he missed the games and stuff, so reliable is kind of a funny word, but one of the more important receivers in terms of converting first downs for his offense around the league, and I don't know if anybody realizes that, but these first down per out run rates of the last 2 years are really, really good. 9.3% in year three, 10% in year four. So for context on that, let me give you the list of players who hit 10%. There's really not very many of them. That puts him right below Nico Collins, Mike Evans, Tetero McMillan, Rashi Rice, and above A.J. Brown and C.D. Lamb and Chris Olave last year in terms of first down per out run rate, which has been a very important stat in terms of predicting future fantasy scoring at receiver. I don't know if it matters that much because he's going to an offense where he's going to have to play with A.J. Brown. But I do think he's completely forgotten about, basically, and he's going over to a potentially high-scoring, pass-heavy offense and gets to play with Drake May. So I wanted to shout out Romeo Doubs.
Doubs is going to, it seems like he's back in a similar fantasy situation as he's been in, where we're questioning, is there volume, you know, and for different reasons, right? Like the Patriots will throw the ball more than the Packers did, and they'll play with better pace, but A.J. Brown got traded over there, so that makes things really complicated. But when you just watch this guy, you're right, he is really good. He's great at, I think what he's really good at in my mind is winning on the outside, whether that be outbreaking routes, breaking back to the quarterback at the catch point on those back shoulders, or in breaking routes. He's just good as that pure boundary receiver. And there's not that many guys who are as reliable as him in that role. So I think the Patriots will find a good role for him, whether that's fantasy friendly, I'm not sure. And just to reiterate, because I see some scuttle in the chat, these Danometer ratings are based on how underrated they are. So if you're getting a 9.4, it means that it's based on under, it's not ranking them in like best to worst sense. It's in the sense of underrated.
It's all relative. It's very scientific. I wouldn't expect you to understand it.
Exactly. Basically what Jacob just said.
Ryan Flournoy. Let's get even more pretentious. Oh, yeah. Let's talk about a guy.
Wait, I got to give Doubs a ranking. I'm going to give him a 6.8. Okay,
sorry.
6.8.
Very nice. All right. We've got a guy here who has 577 career yards, but we've got to talk about him, of course, because he had an even higher first down per route run rate than Romeo Doubs last year. Give me your Ryan Flournoy ranking.
Flournoy, man, if we're just talking underrated, remember, that's what the meter is based on. It's tipping the scales at like 9.5. Nobody thinks this guy's anything. When you actually watch that stretch of games last year where Lamb was hurt, it's like, no, this guy is something. Maybe something really real. And maybe he's, in a lot of ways, what Parker Washington types are for Jacksonville's offense. Huh. But with arguably, and this might be controversial, but I'm going to say it anyway, maybe it's Burrow. It's one of these two, the best pre to post snap processing quarterback in the NFL, Dak Prescott. Why do you think Dak Prescott puts up numbers every single year when he doesn't have the greatest arm talent? He's not very mobile. He's not super big frame wise. It's because he's literally sees the field better than everyone, but maybe Burrow. And for a player like Ryan Flournoy, who's winning and getting open and finding those spots to get open, Dak Prescott will see you. The problem is, of course, the targets are very, very funneled here to George Pickens and CeeDee Lamb, because if you have both of them on the field and you're Dak Prescott, there's almost no situation where the defense can tilt coverage in a way where both of them are going to be doubled or both of them are going to be in tricky spots within that route. So there will be a tough path for him for fantasy if both those guys stay healthy. But man, if this guy ever is a second look in this offense with a player like Dak Prescott, I think he can be a very productive player. So Danometer 9.5 for real life fantasy obviously would be much lower.
All right. I like that. Flournoy, I think, is interesting for dynasty purposes at the very least. And then he's just a name to stow away. Like, remember Ryan Flournoy this season. If something happens to George Pickens or something, make sure you go get Flournoy immediately. If you're in a deep league where you can waste the spot on Flournoy, it might not end up being a waste. So you know, you want to target good players and good offenses. We know the offense is good. We think the player might be good.
David Barr says the Danometer gets more unhinged the longer the episode goes. He's 100% correct on that. Is the Danometer science like Terrence Howard's math? Correct, Matt Carmody. It's the exact same thing. I think Terrence Howard said something like 1 + 1 doesn't equal 2 or something like that, or 1 × 1 shouldn't equal whatever it was. It was something wild. And yeah, it's along those lines. It's a conspiracy driven brain that you know, uses conspires to come up with math that makes no sense.
All right. So I said we want to target good players and good offenses.
Yes.
We know the San Francisco 49ers are a good offense. Do you believe that Ricky Pearsall is a good player?
Ricky Pearsall, man. I was so high on him coming out of Florida. The tape was so damn good. The numbers checked out. The athleticism. He just cannot stay healthy. He'll post an unreal route where you're like, you know who he kind of reminds me of? This is going to sound bad. I don't know if you're going to like this at all, and it may be a terrible take.
Awesome.
Jerry Jeudy. Okay. In the sense that Jerry Jeudy can run a route where everyone's like, oh, my God, this is the best receiver in the NFL. Look at the separation he created. That DB just got his ankles broken. And it's like, but where's the production and consistency? And where's the health?
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, I think Jeudy has shown flashes of upside at times. If Pearsall can be more consistent, then I think it could be really, really good. But we haven't seen that at all, which is reflected in his ADP. I wanted to compare him to Christian Watson.
Okay.
So what I've got here is fantasy points per game when starting and playing at least 2/3 of the snaps. Watson has 30 of these games. Pearsall has 11. Watson averaged 13.2 PPR points per game in them. Pearsall averaged 12.8. Pearsall had more receiving yards per healthy start within this sample, 64 for him, 59.5 per Watson per game. He's really good. He's really good. Here's another Pearsall stat that's kind of crazy, and it looks really good for your boy Michael Wilson, who is just a top 3 receiver. This is qualified receivers with a route win rate of 30% or higher versus man coverage last year per the Fantasy Points Data Suite's charting. Devontae Adams, Jackson Smith-Njigba, Michael Wilson third, Ricky Pearsall fourth. This is a Zay Flowers, Luther Burden tweet as well. This is all our guys. Yeah.
It's a good, group to be in. Even Sutton on there, who had a better 2024 than 2025. I see it with Pearsall. Like, I love him out of college as a prospect. I don't think he's just like Jerry Jeudy in the sense that he just wins with his route running. He has other aspects of his game. He was making plays above his frame. He had great body control in Florida, making some sick catches. He could be a star player. I just personally don't want to hitch my wagon to this after getting burned by him. And it's not just because of the injuries. It's because I think San Francisco could turn him into a Josh Downs type player from a snap share standpoint. It's not out of the realm of possibility in my mind, at least, because if you're building an offense out and you have Pearsall on the field or Stribling on the field, you are going to be a more multiple offense with Stribling on the field 100% of the time, because Stribling is a big body receiver and arguably the best blocking receiver in this last draft class. Pearsall is a little guy, and he's not helping you in the run game whatsoever. So I don't know. I just want to see how this evolves. Like, maybe San Fran is like, no, we need him on the field. He's that good of a receiver. But I don't know. They have options this year that they didn't have last year in Stribling and Mike Evans. So it's interesting to me.
For sure. I hear that, and that might be a bad thing. I also think it could be a good thing where he gets to run more intermediate routes, more horizontally breaking routes. So that's another thing that Ryan and I dug into, is the separation scores and all of that for Pearsall were really good on those routes. And I actually think that's where he's at his best, is those routes. But you see, last year he had this freaking 14.1 yard average depth of target. I think that's just not the best way to use him necessarily. I think that's kind of just the way they had to use him, because they didn't really have much speed on that offense last
year. Good point. Very good point. Now they have a vertical winner with Evans.
For sure. I said this to Ryan. I'm curious what you think of this take. I said, if you want a much, much, much cheaper version of Ladd McConkey, it's Ricky Pearsall for 2026. I think they profile pretty similarly in terms of what the outlook is. We've seen McConkey be productive over stretches of time, though, whereas we haven't ever really seen Pearsall string it together.
That's a very good take, honestly. And that's why I'm going to still probably be in on Pearsall, because the price point is so low. Like, I don't know where his ADP is at right now, but based on my expectation of it, given the recency bias, how people don't like to draft injured players and all of that, you're going to get him at a cheap enough price where it's a great buy, because it's exactly what you should be doing in fantasy, buying players with the upside that he has. I don't know why I feel more confident in a player like Ladd to put it together versus him, because I really shouldn't, because Ladd's been hurt too. So you know what? You made a good point.
That's what I'm saying, man. Injury risk with both of them. They're both guys who have been like kind of inconsistent because they get their targets down the field more, but we know that they can get open. And so like, we think that they can be somebody who works in more consistent ways over the middle of the field and stuff like that. I think Ladd is better after the catch. And I do think he's a better route runner overall, like much more refined. But both of them are just pretty nutso as movers. And so he kind of comes to mind for me when I watch Pearsall. And then they're in high-powered offenses with great coordinators. They've got guys around them to do the vertical stuff. And one of them is really expensive. One of them's really cheap.
It's an interesting take. I think you're onto something here.
Yeah. Pearsall had more games with 85 or more yards last year than Ladd McConkey, and he played 7 healthy games.
Right.
Next up is whoever the hell Dan wants to talk about, because that's the end of my list. I've got some honorable mention guys, but
you can go into some honorable mentions.
Okay. The honorable mentions are Khalil Shakir, and that's it. We already did the honorable mentions. I'm so disorganized. Romeo Dobbs, Flournoy, and Pearsall were the honorable mentions, but I do want to talk about Khalil Shakir because he's like wide receiver 60 or something in dynasty rankings.
Nobody wants Shakir.
It's so weird to me because it's like, what's happened here that's changed things? We brought in DJ Moore. Shakir's just been better than Moore lately.
Yeah.
They play kind of similarly. Like maybe DJ Moore can be a wide receiver one in an offense, but I think he's more like a good 1B who can play off of somebody dominant. And could do good catch and run stuff. I could be wrong on that. That's definitely what Shakir is. Like, don't we have no illusions that Shakir is going to be a wide receiver one of the offense? Maybe DJ Moore can be. Early in his career, I thought maybe DJ Moore could be. Lately, I'm not so sure. But what I do know is that Shakir can produce, man. We've seen him produce for sure when given opportunities. And so I'm curious what you think about him, if he's somebody who's worth talking about, worth rostering, because we're probably not going to talk about him at all from this point on, right? As we get more dialed into 2026 fantasy drafts and stuff, he's an afterthought. But plays one of the best offenses. I don't know. Do we think he's coming off the field? Like, do we think he's going to get fewer routes than last year?
I think this offense, and it's tripped me up as well, has been one of the bigger traps in fantasy over the last few years, because you look at it and you're like, it's Josh Allen's Bills offense. We should be able to be printing here. And the ultimate reality is we've only really printed with Allen himself, who's QB1, QB2, whatever it's been. It's like 1-1-1-2 over his last 5 finishes, and James Cook. We haven't gotten there with Shakir on a consistent basis. We haven't gotten there with any of those guys, Coleman, any of those other guys they've tried out. And Kincaid, who was a guy who early on in his career, I was really heavy, had tons of shares of, and I really never quit, has also been inconsistent, I think, from a fantasy standpoint, because the way they've designed this offense, the question is, now that Joe Brady has full control of the team, he's gotten rid of Sean McDermott, does that change how he calls the offense? And he added DJ Moore to the scheme. If this offense looks different, I'm in on Shakir. If it looks exactly like it's been with Joe Brady over the last 2 years, I'm out on Shakir. I think it's as simple as that for me, because the current offense that they've run the last 2 years with Brady, while very successful for real life purposes for the Bills and for those two guys, James Cook and Josh Allen, it's not very fantasy friendly for a player like Shakir.
Since entering the league, Shakir has a 1.82 yard per route run rate. DJ Moore has a 1.69 per route run rate over those 4 years. He's in the same range as Josh Downs, Chris Godwin, Debo Samuel, Keenan Allen, like some of the better slots over that time, you know,
above
Christian Kirk and Deontay Johnson and Juwan Jennings and players like that, like Wandale Robinson. I think he's a plus at the slot. He really is. He's really good with the ball in his hands, and he's good in the improv game with Josh Allen. I just think he's really underrated, and he always is. And now that the DJ Moore acquisition happened, it's like he's just done for. I don't know. I've got him in a lot of dynasty teams where it's like I've tried to trade him to clear space, and no one will take him for anything. It's just like, all right, I don't know. He's in one of the best offenses in the league.
And he signed there too for at least another year. I think he just re-signed recently, either last year or the year before. So that's also interesting. Maybe he is kind of a low-key dynasty gem. Maybe I should trade for him. I'm thinking about it.
Maybe we'll have an episode where we just talk about the most disgusting cheap buys available. Like, fill out your roster with these guys. Maybe for Best Ball Dynasty, for this very specific format that I love to play. All right, good stuff today, Dan. I love having a little bit of time to get into some random stuff like this during the offseason, get some takes off our chest that it's fun for people, I think, but not too meaningful before we get into the real stuff here in a month or so.
It's coming too. I mean, this is July 4th weekend. This is when the Scott Fishbowl starts after this. People start to get interested in fantasy, starts to rev up. I'm excited for the rev up period. I'm excited for Beyond the Box Score. This is going to be fun. This is our first real full off season with the show. We did it last year, but this one feels more real because we have our own channel, at least to me. So I'm excited to see where it goes and where the audience takes us, because it's ultimately up to you guys to grow this show. We're going to deliver. We're going to keep coming back. And I hope you keep coming back too. And one way to help us grow and get out to more people and make the show bigger is by hitting the like button. If you haven't already done it, please click the like button right now. It's super important to us growing this show. Subscribe to the channel as well. Like, subscribe, and leave comments. It's a three-piece meal that really drives us. You know, it's your classic three-piece, right? You get your three-piece. You ask, if you're smart, you say, I want all dark meat, right? The people who ask for a three-piece meal, two pieces of white meat, nobody wants that. The dark meat is always better. The chicken thigh is always better than the chicken breast. And that's what Beyond the Box Score is striving to be, the chicken thigh of this fried chicken three-piece meal. So like, subscribe, and comment. Like, subscribe, and comment. Have a great rest of your weekend. Enjoy your 4th of July. Stay hydrated. That's my one piece of advice.
Good stuff. Yeah, you guys comment enough. You might get a flex from Dan.
And Jacob, I need to ask you this. Oh, no, we're not flexing on this show. let me ask you this question, Jacob, to close the show out. And I'm curious what the chat thinks. Chat, answer this question. Chat, if you want to and you're still around, answer this question. Give me help on this. So I teased it earlier, but my league's 20th anniversary is coming up, 20th anniversary draft. Who would you choose here? It's an option of three options. It's all... We have three dates that might work for the draft, two Sundays and a Saturday. The Saturday might work for the draft, and we've been trying to get a Saturday draft. And the one person who can't make it has been, in my mind, one of the more dedicated members of this league. He's literally flown from San Francisco, and he used to live there, to New Jersey to draft with us. He's made every effort he can to make every draft, and he's an original member of the league. He can't make the Saturday. The one Sunday, the person who can't make the draft is the person who has moved away and hasn't been at the last five drafts. And then the third Sunday, everyone can make it but one person who is a co-manager of a team. With that said, he's basically just the pure manager. His co-manager has really turned into like a James Dolan of this. Like, he's given up all control of the team, even though he brought him in. But this guy has like won him a championship. He's like, the new guy has won him a champ, done everything, but he can't make it that day. So technically, we have all the teams for one of the Sundays. What's the best option to choose there?
Seems like that one, but right. I'll be honest.
That's the problem. It feels like the best choice.
Yeah.
So if you're listening, Vince and Steve Hall, fair would probably be for me to pick that Sunday.
Is my boy Steve Hall not going to make the draft?
That's the problem. Oh, you know Steve Hall. I forgot.
Steve Hall.
Huge Jacob Gibbs fan. He's the one who can't make that third Sunday. His co-manager can make it. The problem being, the last time he let his co-manager free draft without his say and without him being there, he had a god-awful draft and just like totally went off the rails. And he's just completely like, he used to care about fantasy a little, but now that he has Steve Hall, he doesn't, because Steve Hall is the guy, Jacob, who when we see the final transactions list at the end of the year, Steve Hall is more than triple the next person from a transaction standpoint. He's up at like 4:06 a.m. claiming whatever's left after the waiver wire run.
Total sicko. He knows about Ryan Flournoy.
Oh, he knows everybody.
That's fun.
So I might have to pick that option, Steve Hall. I apologize, but it is the 20th year anniversary and I'm excited for it. We'll do our best.
For the audio listeners, you might not have caught what I was laughing at so hard earlier that I hit my head on the wall behind me, was that Dan did a flex for the camera. So you can check us out on YouTube subscribe and all that on YouTube if you want to find that video.
Hopefully it's the last episode we ever wear a tank top to, is my hope. Though it did get us through. Anyway, have a great rest of your 4th of July. Keep it locked and loaded. Next week, we are back with more live shows, more videos on demand. Jacob and I did one that is hitting the channel soon that I'm really excited about. Emeka Buka, who to me is one of your paths. I don't think it's going to be, but one of your paths towards a Jackson Smith and Jigba type breakout. Not that level, keep it in mind, but somebody we think could be that type of player for your fantasy teams that you're not getting at a really high price point. So we got a lot of good stuff coming. Keep it locked and loaded. Have a great rest of your weekend, and we'll talk to you soon.